Oh, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Get on with it. Toppy, toppy.
It's Blackham.
Hashtag fuck headers.
That's magnificent.
Hello, John.
Up and down.
Well done. Bye-bye.
Come on.
Hello, dear viewer, and welcome to A Burkamp Wonderland. We are a pirate-based fan podcast. I didn't even know what I was going to say there. With me tonight, I have the wonderful Mr. Jason Davies. Say hello, Jason.
Hi, pal, you right?
You should have said hello, John. You missed your chance.
No, I know. I'm not doing that. I'm the one who asks that question, and that's the reply I get.
You are not a performing monkey. You will not play along.
No. Nope.
Damn the consequences.
And I've got to be honest with you, this is the fucking worst ever name of a podcast. Nobody wins at Anfield, oh no. You can't have a pop at Unai. You utter sellout.
What have I put underneath it though, Jace? What's the little picture say?
I don't know, I haven't looked.
Well, you have a little look, you write me an apology, and you unmute yourself, and you come back and you say it. Right.
You're going back fucking 40 years, or 30 years.
I was there, don't knock it.
Wasn't that fast on Twitter there?
Oh, I think it was. And also down at the bottom, where he likes to be, bottom of the sea, it's Chris Carpenter. How you doing, me old fruit?
I'm all right, Daniel. How are you, sir?
I'm sitting here with no pants on, so the world is good.
Fuck's sake. Oh, God. Listener, if you want the screenshot, it's there again. Head in hand.
Oh, here we go.
There it is.
You're in grief from the chat box already.
Jace has turned to drugs already. I mean, it's horrendous.
Yeah,
he's been mashing up paracetamol and stuffing in his eyeballs. That's how bad it is. Here you go. Sam Greaves asks, does the pirate still not rate Salah? You know, the Egyptian Walcott, the pyramid pennant.
Nah, dog shit. Tapping. That's that goal. Tapping.
The tin pot Tutankhamun.
That's the one. Yeah.
Here we go.
Budget Sphinx.
You're rocking heroin chic very well today.
Heroin chic? You cheeky fuck. I've been at the beach all day, and I thought I should have a shower before coming onto this monumentous live broadcast around the world to millions and, well, hundreds of people. So I thought, you know, I should make an effort and have a shower, that's all. I am going curb stomping later on this evening, so it should go down well.
Nice. By the way, I owe an apology to Jove82. He donated on Saturday's show, and I missed it. And Pooh Boy and Shredder missed it as well. And so we didn't shout him out. So, Jove, my apologies, pal. I'm very, very sorry. Thank you for your donation. You're a rock star.
One job, Jove. One job. That's all Ellis had. Couldn't even get that right.
He's on the dump, isn't he?
Absolutely. Anyway, our very own Mr. Gunahonic is in the chat box. You listeners may well know that the wonderful Australian, not our Aussie Don, but the other one, Matt Sanasi, made our intro. And then when I was editing it to put a little bit from Steve in there at the big part of the intro and doing the outro, I thought, oh, I can slip another one in here. So there's our very own Mr. Gunahonic saying, get down, dog. And also, I'm going to slip one in of Jeff. I couldn't find any that the only one I got was, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Which is what he says every time he joins us. And I thought, no, I don't want to, because Jeff will find out where I live and come and poo in my flower bed. So I didn't put those on. But yeah, we will be adding some more as and when they pop up once they get their own one. We've also got our very own Mr. Underground, Carl Walker here, says it's gone wrong already. You stay there, Mr. Walker. You stay there. Your time is coming. We're going to read out exactly the conversation you had with Ellis all the way through.
Unlike the trains you manage on a daily basis, they're not coming, but your time is.
To be fair, yes, he makes Fifey's life hell, doesn't he?
Why was, just quickly before we launch into this, why was Mr. Fife drinking milk after having him run this morning? What was that about?
Nobody knows.
Haven't you seen his honeymoon pics? Honeymoon pics, okay? He embarrasses Freddie in his underwear modelling days.
He's ripped as shit, isn't he? Yeah.
He was cut to hell. You know, he was chiselled.
I know.
Michelangelo made him. I was shamed by him.
Mm. Imagine how Daddy feels, Jace. I mean, the only thing he rips is fucking Doritos. That's the only thing he rips.
And pistol apps.
Anyway, get on with it.
I've moved on from Doritos, people. There is a new love in my life. I always have my bags upside down because it annoys Sexy Frank. But these are McCoy's Munchies. Yeah, if they want to sponsor us. There you go.
Oh, that's good. They are nice. They're called munchies. They're called muchos, you pillow.
I couldn't read it. Could ask back to fun. And I'm sorry to everybody who's listening on earphones. You just had to put up with that crackling noise. One fell out of my lap. I'll tell you, this is the state of my life. I was hungry last night, so I had a box of cereal, took the bag out of the cereal, I was pouring it in my mouth until it was all gone. That took 10 minutes. An hour later, I went, what's that itching? There was a wedge of the cereal caught in between my moobs, and I still ate it.
I know you tuned in for football talk, but
you got this shit instead.
I don't know how I didn't find it before. If I'd have left that there, that'd have been a nice morning snack.
You're a walking advert for Dr. Christian, you are. Seriously.
What's that place in Switzerland? Dignitas.
Right, so we should get on with the thing. The only really thing we've got to talk about now is the Liverpool game. So we'll start on a low. Jace, tell us about why you're so angry at the likes of me and Ellis when it comes to the Liverpool game.
I'm not angry at all. I mean, look, we've done the live show after the game. I thought it was more than fair to everyone, to be honest with you. There's no point in going after people. Liverpool were superb. Their movement off the ball, their interplay was excellent. Okay, let's not try to make this out as a sort of a witch hunt on anybody, because it's not. Unai picked his setup. He picked his tactics. I don't understand why you go to Anfield and don't try to put any pressure on the ball at all. You know, we did later on in the game and in certain areas at certain times, but majority of the time we were inviting them on and we're giving them all that space down the flanks. And, you know, the pressure was going to tell. How anybody can take any positives out of this game, I don't know. You know, I thought Pepe looked good at times. I think Willock looks great going forward. You know, Guendouzi gave his heart, to be fair to him. He's a little bit rushed and he's a little bit all over the place. Xhaka seems to have had a hard time off people, and yet his numbers were solid. I don't think he did much wrong. I thought the tactics were wrong. I thought, you know, we needed to bring on fresh blood earlier than what we did as well. You know, the problem is Liverpool had taken their foot off the gas by the time Lacazette came on. So you can't really, you know, gauge anything by that. But we just invited pressure on us, and we know what a good team they are. It was just a very frustrating performance to watch. You know, when you look at the stats, we nearly had parity in possession. But it didn't look like that in the game at all. It was one-way traffic. If you look at the areas that the game was played in, it's our final third, most of it. And that's the trouble I find with it, is that people try and say, oh, it's okay, it's fine, you know, they're European champions. Well, yeah, they are, and they were the better team. I'm not saying anything Unai could have done would have made it better, but at least have a little bit of a go at them. And I'm not saying play three up top or whatever, but if you're not applying pressure to the ball in open play, you're going to expect 25-plus shots at goal. And somebody said, but they didn't have, other than the goal, they didn't have any clear-cut chances in the first half. Well, Mane screwed the Ceballos mistake up. Okay, Salah had another one. They had three or four very good chances in the first half. And we seem to be whitewashing the performance, which I don't think you should do. You know, we need to look at it honestly, and we need to learn from it, because if we don't learn from it, we can have a shock on our hands on Sunday. And that's what really worries me.
Where do you sit on that, Chris? Do you agree with him? Or are you, knowing you, you're probably a little bit in the middle of everything?
I'm a little bit in the middle. I get the people that say we should have gone there with a bit more attack, you know, a bit more sort of persistence in forward play, and that we should have gone with a bit more of a plan to go at them. But I think you kind of have to look at things overall in terms of where we are. We are not on Liverpool and Man City's level anywhere near. We're nowhere near those teams at the moment. And although people don't want to necessarily accept that fact. I don't. But we are. You know, we're not on their level. And as much as it pains me to say it, I do think that some of these games, the approach we took on Sunday is the one we do need to take. We need to go in with a little bit of, not so much sit back, but be a bit careful. Try and pick our chances, take those chances, and either get a win or take a point. And I think people's opinions of that game and the tactics would have been very, very different had Pepe have put that chance away, had Aubameyang made it 2-1, which I felt he should have done when I think it was 2-0 at the time where he missed that one-on-one. And I know it's ish, buts and maybes, but it is a very fine margin. And if you look at, for example, what Chelsea did, they went to Old Trafford and they took on Man United. They too missed chances and lost 4-0. And I think it's a very, very fine line between how you set your team up and how you go about things and then how you look at it afterwards. And I know Gary Neville's analysis got quite a lot of raised eyebrows from the Arsenal fan community saying that, you know, we should take it as a positive and we should look at the things that were good. And it was a different looking Arsenal side. I was on board with what he was saying because I understood what he was saying. I do agree with what Jace is saying. I'm not saying that we should sit here and, you know, and bang our positivity drum and say, oh, how wonderful, we lost away to another, you know, to Liverpool again. But there were some good signs and there were positive signs there. And I think the only thing that maybe in hindsight I would have looked at is I'm not personally sure I would have left Lacazette out of the side. I actually think this game probably would have suited him more than Aubameyang, in truth, if you were going to play that system. But the one thing that Unai Emery is and has been described as is a chameleon manager. He does like to change things. He does like to move things around, and he's not going to change. And I think some Arsenal fans are finding that hard to accept and hard to get on board with. And it's the same Arsenal fans that were applauding and cheering from day one when he made substitutions early on and everyone was all on board. So I think you just kind of have to take it in isolation. I totally agree with Jace. I'm not sitting here saying it's a positive, but I don't also sit here and go, oh, God. You know, it's a real downer. And I do think that we've got more chance of beating these sides at home than we do away. And let's not forget, Liverpool have not lost at home for 40 games. You know, however much of a bunch of, you know, what's the, particularly their fans tend to be, they're a very good side and with some very, very good players. And we are, in my opinion, 3 years behind them. So that's kind of how I see it, basically.
Can I come back in on that? You know, this is the thing, Chris. I don't know what the hell Gary Neville's on about, because I looked at positives. Where were the positives? You know, I didn't see us. You know, even if Pepe would have scored the first goal, we'd have still lost that game. I'm sorry, there's no way we were winning that game. The amount of pressure they put on us, okay, we were always going to break. And the mistakes that came through, the one from the corner, you can kind of ignore that when that was, you know, that was just a mishmash of people. Socrates concentrating on VVD more than anything else. Guendouzi getting bundled over. It was a nightmare, okay? But they came out at us with the intent to attack us, okay? And we couldn't handle it. We were shattered from all the defending we did. And we're waiting back. We're not going out to press the ball at any time to turn them over quickly. We're just hoping to win the ball when it comes to a certain point and then play out. But of course, we're not playing out very quickly, okay? Because it's got to go through two people or, you know, and I don't mean to have a go at Guendouzi, but he needs two or three touches to get the ball going forward at the moment. You know, he's going to learn as he goes along. But I don't see where the positives were. And for all this thing of if we'd have grabbed the first goal, well, we didn't. I mean, it wouldn't have made a difference if it did. And that's what annoys me, is we went with a bit of a limp game plan and we got found out very badly.
My only thought to that would be, I don't really remember Liverpool doing a lot with the possession they had, really. I know...
They were 80 crosses, Chris. 80
yeah,
crosses.
But, yeah,
we did defend well at times, okay? And we did defend well at times, you know? But, you know, we were hoping rather than planning.
Oh, I'm not denying that. Yeah, we were looking Well, I do agree with you when you say that we would have given enough chances even if we had gone 1-0 up. I would have backed us to have held on, maybe scratched out a draw. I do agree. I think we would still have been on the back foot. And if anything, we might have gone further into our shell if we'd have gone in front. But I just felt that it's a really weird one, because how many games did we see in the Wenger era where we would absolutely dominate possession at home? And, you know, I think of games against, I think we beat Cardiff 1-0 one year, we beat Wolves 1-0, absolutely dominated the game, battered them from start to finish. But we'd also lost games at home against, you know, offence, lower teams, where we'd done the same. And I just sort of thought to myself, well, yeah, Liverpool are clearly a step, well, three, four, five steps above us. There's no denying that. And yeah, I know Arsenal fans would want to see us go there and take the game to them. But equally, our game plan almost seemed to be, do you know what? You can have the ball, you can cross it in, because you aren't going to create a lot. And I didn't really feel like they did. Where it all came a bit wonky is that we didn't offer a huge amount going the other way, other than the chances we squandered.
Okay, there's 2 points to that then, okay? Loki 73 is just put in the box here. We played 8 in a defensive third for most of the game with hardly any balls over the top. And that's one of the annoyances. If you're going to pile it over the top into the channels and give Aubameyang and Pepe something to chase, you know, that's all the better. As it is, we're playing the ball across our own box and causing havoc. The other side of it is, you know, I agree with you. Yeah, in the past, you know, look, we've had all the possession and no penetration. But when have we ever done this before and it worked? Because I don't remember us ever doing this before. Not under Unai, not under Arsene. You know, we played a more defensive game against City in the game that Santi shone in, when Santi and Coughlin did a hell of a job that day. But we haven't done it last season. You know, he's gone to three at the back, or, you know, he's mixed and matched. And, you know, Ceballos was non-existent in the game. You know, apart from giving the ball away, he was awful. Awful. Mm. Okay, you know, that welcomed the Premier League, Danny Ceballos.
He was playing in a different position, Jace. He was asked to play out on the left-hand side of the midfield, which
he was tip of the diamond, apparently, okay, Dan? But he was tip of the diamond. There's a diamond for three flat midfielders covering the back four and Ceballos further up. And it just didn't work out.
I saw him a lot of the time on the left-hand side covering for Monreal when Monreal went for a run.
That's because there was so much ball coming down there. They're having to come up and cover. But, you know, it's just one of those things where I'm not saying we'd have won. And no way. You know, we said that in the preview show. You know, I asked for two predictions just to make one positive at least. But it just, I don't see where the positives we can take out of that game are.
Well, in other news, all the possession and no penetration is John Welsh's forthcoming autobiography. If you want to pick that up, it'll be in all crap stores as of Monday. So.
It'll be in all VD clinics by the end of the month.
Oh God!
Right, if we go back to the start of the game, we all knew that Liverpool will be massively attacking from their fullbacks, their wing backs, whatever you're going to call them. So we sat back for the first 10 minutes and then we absorbed it. And I thought that's the time when he's going to make a decision on who's going to play where. But we didn't. We narrowed it straight down the middle. We kept everything nice and tight. And they were just running at our fullbacks over and over and over. But I could see what his plan was. He was hoping that when they're going back, like when they're attacking on either of their flanks, that's going to leave Matip and VVD, leave them at the back. And then we're going to make a break for them, which we did 4 or 5 times in the first half. And he looked really good when we did it. VVD shit his pants when he was 1-on-1 with Pepe. Pepe was doing pullbacks and he was running around. He was doing a great job. This is nothing really came off because it was only his third game for Arsenal. But I thought, apart from the goal at the end of the first half, I thought we showed some really positive signs. And from about minute 10 to about minute 25, we were on top of the game. We were looking really good.
From minute 15 to minute 20, we had a bit of possession, okay? We did in their half. But other than that, it was all them. With, you know, we were playing in their half and we did look okay at that point. That was the frustrating part. And then we sink back again and we're allowing all this pressure on, which, you know, it just didn't make sense. It just didn't make sense. We didn't have the athleticism to get up and support Albert or Pepe. You know, the guys were shattered at the end of the first half. They really were.
I'm having a mute because my neighbour's decided to fuck around with his shitty car, useless twat. Yeah, so we all knew that that's what they were going to do. And I thought, after a while, he was going to change the tactics, but he didn't. And I could see what they were trying to do. But, Chris, would you think that it would have been – I think Emery has decided the way that we can win stuff or do well is to copy the Liverpool formation, the Liverpool style of play, mainly that being having a decent goalkeeper and having three people up front. Do you think we'd have been better off if we'd have just stuck with those three up front and mirrored their formation? I know it's hard with Monreal because he can't do that for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with the sort of the copying Liverpool model thing. I'm not sure that's what he's going for. I think really what he's trying to go for is how best can I make an attacking side and a young and energetic side without losing too much in the midfield area. And the more I've seen of we might come on to this a bit later on, but the more I've seen of the young, enthusiastic, quick midfielders that we've been using at the start of the season, Guendouzi and Willock in particular, the more I see that being the way forward, because it's dynamic enough that you can get back in and protect when your front three don't have the ball. It's good enough, it's technically good enough to push the ball through that midfield area as well. It's got the legs in there. The defence is still a tough one because I don't think anyone plays like Liverpool do, really. Not with such reliance on the fullbacks. And I think even Man City don't rely on the fullbacks as much as Liverpool do. They build up through them, but the final third is where they kill teams. And the fullbacks are often the distributors rather than the final product, whereas Liverpool's final product tends to come from those fullbacks. But teams have got them this season as well, so I kind of understood where we were going with it. You almost wonder if Unai maybe thought on Saturday, do I go for this? You know, what some of the fans' frustration is almost like, what if? You know, what could have happened? But those same people would have been, you know, even more open arms if we had taken them on and been four or five down in 20 minutes. So it's a I do agree with you, Danny. I think that the Monreal thing, we'll probably come on to that later on as well, but that's a big thing. I think when you get Tierney and Bellerin in the side, I think we'll look a very different side. Arguably, we'll be an even more attacking side. But more than that, we'll be a lung-bursting side. We'll be an energetic, speedy counter-attacking side. Never really felt like we had that from our defence or midfield build-up. We only had that from our two forwards on Sunday. And Pepe's best work was done when he was pulling wide, which really was kind of not where we needed him. So there was a bit of an imbalance there. But I don't know. I'm not sure we're trying to copy other teams like Liverpool. I think we're just trying to find our own individual formula, and I'm not sure that we've hit upon that yet. And we have to remember we're still a new side, really. You know, we've got what, three new players in the starting lineup on Saturday, two more to come in. It's, you know, we're three games in. It's very early.
It is difficult, and I mean, look, you know, you can't non-blast Unai for it. You can't, okay? You know, I mean, it is third game of the season. You are up against an excellent side away from home. It's difficult. But the lack of pressure on the ball at any point in the game, you know, that really, really was frustrating. You know, we just invited the pressure on, and there's no way we are going to hold on. You know, if you're right, you know, 220-year-olds, Xhaka, who has mobility issues to cover the, you know, a dodgy defence as it is, you're asking for trouble. And that's the bit I didn't understand.
That's something else. What would you have done to change it, Chase? What would you have done formation-wise or tactics-wise? Or what wouldn't you have done?
I'd probably gone 4-2-3-1, okay? But two holding midfielders.
Xhaka and Lucas.
Yeah, probably. Probably, you know. We don't know what Torreira's fitness level is at the moment. You know, only Unai knows that. But hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? You know, it's easy to sit here and say that's what I'd probably have done. But, you know, would you? I'd probably put Willock at the tip of that. But no, actually, I'd have gone Guendouzi because I'm hoping he would hold on to the ball and you know, try to create something, you know, and drop into deep into defence when he has to help out. But, you know, I mean, what would I have done? What would you do? Hindsight is, you know, what's happened has happened, and we've just got to learn going forward into the next game for that.
The one thing that I think the first three games of the season has shown me personally, and you know, I don't know if people agree or not, that's the point of the podcast, I suppose. To me, our midfield looks far better with Guendouzi, Willock or Torreira than it does a Xhaka-type player. And I know...
I totally disagree with that.
Fair enough, yeah. And I think, and I know a lot of people will do, but I think in the modern game and the way the game is played and the way that we like to play, and particularly when we get our fullbacks in place, I don't think personally there are many games where Granit Xhaka fits this style of play. And I know a few people have said, I know Jace, you're one who thinks Guendouzi slows the game down. I don't agree with that. I think he started the season brilliantly, and he started the season like a player who's matured even more over the summer. And will it
98% rate against Newcastle or Burnley?
Pass, yeah,
he's up there. To be fair, Chris, okay, what he has done is since pre-season, he stopped all the nonsense with falling over, and he's concentrating on his football. Okay, I still think he's at that development point where. It's a few too many touches. I love the boy's talent. I think, you know, when he finally finds his feet and sees the whole game, I think he's going to be exceptional. I really do. Okay, I got a lot of time for this kid, but I'll tell you one thing: if we go into Sunday's game with a midfield of, say, for argument's sake, Torreira, Guendouzi, and Willock, we get hyped.
I'd love that.
I think we get beat.
I think the experience thing, I do agree with that. I just think that it's a funny one, isn't it? Because we say the word experience, and then I'll just say three words to you, David Luiz Xhaka. We say the word experience, and yet two of our most experienced players on the pitch on Saturday, made several mistakes, or, you know, in Xhaka's case, on Saturday.
Xhaka didn't make any mistakes, as far as I was aware. Ceballos is the one who played across the box to Mane.
I've watched a few bits back, and positionally, I don't think he was great again. But
most recoveries, you know, he had most recoveries, most touches, his stats are dead tail, mate.
If you look at it as a whole, though, you say, you know, Granit Xhaka's got to play our big games because he's our most experienced player, and then you watch what he does against Brighton in a game where, you know, the manager and the squad took all the shit, and the simple facts are, if he doesn't make the most basic mistake that I'd have somebody's asked for in Sunday League, we're in the Champions League now. We're not having this conversation. Yet our experienced player, who we're relying on in a, you know, in a potentially a North London derby, I mean, I don't know. And I'm not just attacking Xhaka. I do think he has a lot of qualities. I'm not saying he's crap, but I just don't think this team works with him in it.
That's fair enough, Chris. That's fair enough. But on Saturday, you saw Socrates, I thought we played zone at corner, but he's more interested in grabbing hold of Virgil van Dijk. It was a definite penalty if Matip hadn't scored, because he had half his jersey hanging out. Okay, then you've got the amount of pressure we put on us. Of course they're going to make mistakes. You know, Luis on the penalty, that's just a panic thing. Don't put your hand in the fire to me, you know, and they go and do it.
Particularly at that time of the game as well, a minute into the second half. I mean, that's game over, isn't it?
Ridiculous. And on the third goal, that's a bit of brilliance by Salah.
I'm not sure.
You can turn around and say, why was Luiz out there?
It's a good finish, but he does. Luiz sells himself badly.
I'm more interested in why Socrates doesn't come across to try to block the shot.
I'll tell you why. I think he was still in shock that Luiz had gone in for that challenge on the touchline.
As much as I love the humour, okay, come on. Why doesn't he? He pulls out of it like he did last week for the Burnley goal.
let's be honest, Salah's always scoring in that position, and that's his type of goal, isn't it? I know what you're saying, and I'm not on here to defend the players that get criticism. I just feel we're going to be a better team with young or younger, more athletic types. I've been really impressed with Torreira's cameos. Every game he's come on, I think he's looked really good. And I know he's probably not match fit yet, but I would definitely throw him in Sunday, especially given what he did at this fixture last year.
Yeah, but to be fair, Chris, okay, I agree with you there, the future. Okay, but I think you have to manage that integration very, very carefully, because it's one thing, you know, when everything's going well, you know, and they're on top of the world, great. Willock looks superb going forward. Going backwards, I'm not too sure. Okay, he's got a lot to learn. He's still only 20. Do you know what I mean? Then you've got Guendouzi. He's still on the learning curve. You can see the talent. Okay, you can see the things he does well, but I don't trust him defensively alongside Torreira. I don't see those guys as marshalling a midfield and winning on Sunday. I really don't. But, you know, for sure, you have to integrate them and bring them along so that they are going to be the future of the midfield.
So, Jase, if you had to pick two or three positives out of that game, what would you pick? And I'll pick some negatives, because I didn't expect to win. I said 3-2. You said 4-0.
I said 3-2 to us as well, to be fair.
You did have two.
If I was going to pick positives out of the game, I thought Leno was good. I thought Pepe, you know, this is a guy who hasn't had much football recently after the African Cup of Nations.
First half, brilliant.
Yeah, boy, you know, I think once he gets his shooting boots on, look out.
He doesn't run out of energy, though, does he? And he's still doing it the whole time. And he was scared. Like, there was that stat. He was the first player to dribble past VVD in, I think, ever.
I don't know about that, mate. I don't know how true that is. But look, you know, I thought Aubameyang kept working hard. You know, Lacazette has this moniker of the hard-working centre-forward, which he is, okay? But I think a lot of people also forget that, you know, Aubameyang puts his heart and soul out there. These boys do leave everything on the pitch. Willock impressed me a couple of occasions, with ball going forward, trying to bring the ball out. But I'd have liked to have seen it down the channels, so to speak, to give Aubameyang and Pepe something to run onto and get up and support them. You know, everybody will see this differently, won't they? I think that's the truth of the matter. We all see the game differently. It's a game of opinions.
Chris, do you think that if we would... I'm going to change that. Beginning of last season, we played two of the hardest games of the season early on when we weren't ready. Do you think that was a case of what it was playing at Anfield, the fact that it was only our third game of the season? You mentioned we got new players bedding in. Do you think it's a collective collection? Do you think it's just all those things mixed up together, and that if we would have had a fully fit team and Emery could have had any player that he wanted playing any position, it wouldn't have been the same type of game, would it?
Yes and no. I agree and I disagree. I honestly don't think playing them at the time we did has anything to do with it, to be honest. I'll be completely straight, and people will be very annoyed when I say this, but I'm going to be completely honest. I've written off Man City away and Liverpool away pre-season. I just have. I don't have any criticism with us losing those games. I'm not saying I'm okay with it. I'm not saying I'm, you know, holding street parties and cheering on the opposition. No, far from it.
Well, those two teams last season, between them, all season, 38 games between them, they lost one game and they drew two at home. Man City won 18, Liverpool won 17. You're not going to go there.
I look at Chelsea and Manchester United away as games that we should be trying to win this season. Arguably, we should have been trying to win them last season, but Chelsea were a lot stronger last season than they are this. Man United are, you know, Ollie's at the broken, fallen off car wheel. You know, they're tragic, and I'm really enjoying it. But I think those games, I don't think I would be quite as understanding as Emery, you know, at the style Emery employed at Anfield. If he does that at Old Trafford or at Goodison Park or at down the road, different game because form goes out the window. But, you know, if we went away to Burnley and played against them like we did against Liverpool, then no, I'm not sure I would be quite as defensive, you know, as the manager as I am been on this one. But looking at the games against Man United and Chelsea, I think we should be going into those to try and win the games. But yeah, Man City away, Liverpool away. You know, you get lucky, a player gets sent off early on. Look at yesterday, Man City were given a good game by Bournemouth. I thought Kyle Walker could easily have walked twice in that game. You know, suddenly that's a different game. City have proven that they can be beaten, and Liverpool too. They had a few shots in their first two games before us. So, you know, I don't look at those games as huge. They are those games, even the home games against Liverpool, Man City, they are not going to dictate where our season finishes. Where our season, you know, what our season will hinge on is how many points we pick up, particularly in the running after what happened last season. And if we can get back on a similar run to last year where we can go, you know, 7, 8, 10, 12 games unbeaten, putting in performances and taking advantage of those teams around us. And the one thing that really sort of I was really happy about, but at the same time really bugged me about the weekend, is seeing United lose. Seeing Spurs lose to Newcastle at home, it never gets better.
The mighty Newcastle.
1-0 at Newcastle. But yeah,
wasn't it at Spurs?
It was at Spurs, yeah, even better. And they didn't get the penalty, which is hilarious.
VAR let them down. I mean, they should appeal that. Whatever it was, yeah, three or four decisions.
Their fourth man. But that's the only the double kick in the teeth, because you think, oh, you know, if we could have just gotten something from Anfield or a point. You know, even at this stage of the season, those points are massive. But on the flip side of that, oh, not of our closest challengers. So, you know, that's the way I look at it.
And they won't be doing that for long because they're shit. A couple more things on this before we move on. Jace, compare this game to the 5-1 result last season. Do you see improvement?
No, not really.
You miserable shit.
I don't. I just genuinely don't.
Well, mathematically, it's a better thing of two. Even you've got to admit a two. Or one and a half. Meet me halfway, one.
No, I just don't think... at least last season, we tried to pressure the ball. I know Firmino screwed us down the middle last season. And no doubt he had that in his mind when he put together the setup and the tactics of the game. But... you know, when you've got 80 crosses coming into your box, I don't see that as a positive in any way, shape or form. I think if you're grasping at straws, if you think our performance was any better this season than it was last season.
Do you agree, Chris? I think it was. I think we showed some different attacking improvements. Defending, no better. But attacking, still have play, pace, width up front at times.
I think it's too early to judge defending because our very own Dave put in the chat box earlier on that when Tierney's fit, I think he's going to be one of the best left-backs around, if not the best. So I think you can't judge until that's in place. And you can't judge the back four because it's not settled yet. I think when Rob Holding and Bellerin are back in it as well, I think we'll see the proper back four we're looking at. So a jury's out on the defence, attacking-wise.
Compared to the 5-1 defeat last season, that's what I meant.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team without Mustafi in it, so that's an upgrade for me. I'll say no more on that one. What we should say some more about, though, is a certain gentleman who's donated us some money. I think we should mention that.
I'm looking at the StreamYard thing. It doesn't pop up on there.
I put it in the box.
It's Ed.
Yes. Thank you,
Jace. I've got the dear viewer. We have, before in Hangouts, we used to have one box, and it's all we got chat in there was our chat. Now we've got one box of private chat, one box so I can see what you're doing, so I don't have to go to YouTube. And the donation didn't pop up, and I didn't read Jason's message because I've got it saved on a question from K-Man. So, Jace, do the honours with Ed.
The magnificent, the magical, the man of the moment, Ed Loud, smashes in with a £5 donation, and he says, thanks for many wonderful shows. Wish I could do this every time. Looking forward to thrashing them at Spurs. Fingers crossed. Come on, you gooners.
Hey.
Now, dear listener, okay, hats off to Ed Loud. Show him a bit of love, okay, because Ed Loud is the man who pushed his granddad in a wheelchair 12 miles for walk and talk from Selhurst Park to the Emirates last season. He's also recently done a marathon He pushed his grandfather for a marathon distance. I think it was over 2 days for in raising money for the Samaritans as well. Ed Loud is my hero. Ed, you're a rock star. Top cheers, pal.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. So, right, we should move on to some. I'll come back to a question from it's from Jesus, nearly 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, we went.
It's Ed.
Oh, I said he's right. Overrated.
For me to offend our religious views, I do apologise.
It's from Cayman 1867, and I don't think that was when he was born. He says, was the loss a case of Emery strategy or player execution, Chris? And Jace, you answered it as well.
Poorly worded question there, given what I just said.
That's why I was waiting. Did this at 7:29.
Just give me the start of that again. Sorry, that I got the second part. Just give me the start of that again.
Was it the case of Emery having a bad strategy, or was it the players not doing as they were told, is what he means? Or both?
And this is particularly on Saturday. Do you know, I don't think either. I really don't. I didn't see anything from the players that suggested to me. Like, sometimes, Jace will probably agree with this, sometimes you watch games, and we've used the Xhaka example at Brighton last year. Sometimes you watch games, particularly under Arsene, and you go, Jesus, the manager's getting all this shit. And the fact is, the players were fucking appalling. I mean, how many times have we watched that and just watched the team just be absolutely crap? And, you know, being a coach myself, sometimes you can put everything. You can draw pretty pictures on whiteboards. You can give players notes. You can send them bloody WhatsApp to Nightfall Games. You say, look, this is your role. And if you do this, this and this, they go on the pitch, fucking gone, straight out of their heads, because they're just footballers, and unfortunately a lot of footballers are bloody stupid, but I never really felt on Saturday that players weren't doing the jobs, and that's another thing that I would have taken as a positive in air quotes, is that they never stopped. They never, you know, they kept going, and I know that's the minimum you should expect, but old Arsenal sides, you didn't always get that, so fair play. And as for the manager's responsibility, sometimes you just got to sling your hands up and say, yep, beaten by the better side, and we were. You know, that's there's no denying that. I hate saying it. There's not many teams I dislike more than Liverpool, unless they're in Champions League finals against Spurs, obviously. But, you know, they were a better side. They are a better side. And they deserved that win. But I don't feel like there was anything we did that handed it to them. You know, I know Jay sees that differently, but I personally didn't. I just felt that we missed two very big chances, and we got punished by a side that, you know, did dominate the ball for long periods. So I wouldn't necessarily go with either of those two, if I'm honest.
Chase?
I think it's a combination of three things. I thought the manager, he got the tactics wrong. I'm not going to lambast him for it. He went out with a game plan. He believed in it. It didn't come off. It too much pressure came on us. I think, you know, obviously there were a couple of mistakes in there from players. You know, when you're under that much pressure, it's going to happen. I'm not going to lambast them for it either, because you just can't soak up that much pressure with that intensity of game and not make mistakes and stupid ones at that. But I thought also, as Chris alluded to, Liverpool were very good. They were very, very, very good. So, and I hate saying that as well. So, yeah.
I agree with what you both said. I think personally, we said on the previous show, Jace, I wouldn't change the formation of what we played against Burnley and Newcastle. They're two teams that play two different types of football. I mean, quite similar with the manager's ways, but Burnley are a half-decent side. They got a big lumps up front. Newcastle, have got they've just bought some players in France. They're quick. They're going to score goals, but they concede more because they're rubbish. And I'd have kept the same formation we played against those two. I may even have kept the likes of Willock and Nelson in, because no one's done anything wrong. We've had players come into the squad now and come into the starting 11 and not do what the rest of the players have done up to that point. So it does make you wonder what Emery is doing. At. He is not the Tinker Man version 2. He needs to stop it. You need to have your best team and only change it if someone's injured. And I think we need to see more of that, and then we'll see more consistent results.
I think, you know, the lineups will change as the season goes on. It's going to be interesting what happens in September. We've got a scum at home. Then we've got Watford away. Okay. Then we've got Villa at home.
I'm going to that, Jace.
I know, club level wanker. And then we've got United away. Okay, September, really could be, you know, a tough month. It's going to be a tough month for us, including Europa League. It's you know, I'm... Ooh.
Gosh, Europa League, oh, God. I forgot about that mighty beast coming back. I can't wait to go to FC, Tesco, carrier bag, and fucking Matchbox United. Oh, God.
Did you see that Carabag lost 3-2 or 3-1 to a Northern Irish team in the...
Oh, first... yes, it was in Linfield, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's a weird result. What was it? Porto went out of the Champions League qualified, didn't they? And yeah. Ajax was struggling, and yeah.
Ajax are 0-0, and they were down to 10 men.
Didn't Carabag beat this last season?
I've blocked all that out.
Yeah, it's all gone. I think they did, didn't they? One of the games, yeah, might have done. Was that
Chris, the going team? Going into this Europa League stuff, what would be your strategy, be it tactics, players, staff, whatever it is, for the six games? Would they differ from home to away? Would they differ to who we're playing? Or would you just go, like I would, you people on the fringe of the first team, including the kids, go on, off you go, knock yourselves out?
Depends who we play. It depends who we play. If we're in a group where, you know, you would imagine the opposition would be similar to what we had this time last year, so you'd probably look at that and think there's probably going to be... What is it, a group of four we go into? Is it four?
Yeah.
So you'd imagine two of the three will probably be cannon fodder. And if that's the case, yeah, I'm with you. Get you know, get the likes of Saka,
Smith Rowe,
Rob Holding coming Martinez. Back to fitness, Bella in back to fitness, Martinez in goal. I'd give the young boy Martinelli a run up front as well. Yeah, in those sort of games, you know, if you lose to the first two and you think, shit, qualifications on the line, well, not the first two, but if you do play each other twice, don't you? If you lose the first two and qualifications on the line, fine, you scrap that and you go back to the established players. But for as long as you can get away with it, you play the fringe players. And depending on the draw in the second stage, even the second stage, I think you'd probably play, you know, fringe players. But we've still got a transfer window open for another, what, 5-6 days? You know, we might well lose Mustafi and El Nene possibly. So, you know, that's two more players that you probably would have put into that Europa League batch. So, yeah, I think the emphasis will be on youth this year. It's quite exciting, actually. I'd like to see a few of these young kids, see how good they are. But yeah, for me, it just depends on the draw. And I would love to see us play and blood young players in that opening round, if we can, definitely, yeah.
Just looking at the, still getting used to the StreamYard thing, it has come up with Ed's donation, but it came up as a normal message because I was paused at the top on K-Man. So there you go. There's Ed's message. Cheers, Ed.
The one thing I'd add to what Chris has just said.
I was going to ask you, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, you know, I think you've got to start blooding youngsters, you know. You've got to give them game time, but also the fringe, as you said, the fringe players. You know, for argument's sake now, it's quite obvious Unai wants El Nene and Mustafi gone, right? That's fine. But if he doesn't sell them in this transfer window, they have to get game time because we are the Arsenal, and you know we're at some point, you know, we're going to pick up injuries and we're going to need to play these players in bigger games, okay? You saw at the end of last season, El Nene getting a load of stick. He hadn't played first-team football for months. For absolute months, okay? And then we're expecting the world from him. You know, it was nonsense. Our end of season last year was all down to the coach not managing things properly. Okay?
We need to keep their value as well, those players.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got to keep your value up, but you've got to keep them playing football. Because if you don't, we're going to come a cropper. And we're going to come a cropper, not just in Europa League, but in the Premier League as well.
A Roy Cropper, some might say.
Fair enough.
You know, we were all laughing at City last season and Chelsea. And yet, United came a cropper towards the end of the season again, thankfully. But Chelsea beat us to Champions League.
It was funny, though, wasn't it? It was funny.
It was funny right until the time they fucking emptied us 4-1 in the European Cup final.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking that's the Champions League.
More United than Chelsea. I mean, they are a fucking crash, aren't they? But yeah, I know what you're saying. I know the point you're making. Yeah.
Well, moving on a little bit, I've got an interesting question here from Selavi.
I can't believe that for a minute. Not on this podcast.
Thanks for that. Your audio is slightly delayed from your video, so we can see you grinning like matey boy out of The Shining, and I don't know what you're doing until the audio catches up. He says,
I don't know why.
I say he. I don't know. This person says, quick question, guys. Why do Londoners... But Londoners born and bred support clubs like Man United or Liverpool. In America, a New Yorker can never support the LA Lakers. Why does it happen in England? I think we can all have an answer to that. Jason,
I disagree with that. That happens all over the world. You know, I'm a Welshman who supports the Arsenal. I follow the New York Jets in NFL, okay?
Jets.
Stop it. Stop it.
I'm a Dolphins fan. That's the only time I've ever smiled at anything to do with NFL for a long time.
Oh, well, look, we might have a good season, but the problem you got is kind of, you know, it happens. You know, there's a guy from LA who does a Jets podcast. You know, you listen to them talk about their college teams. They're from all over. You know, I don't know. I think, you know, you get a lot of people who move to a country or move to a city and then they'll support the local team or... You know, like me, I grew up playing rugby. You know, I didn't go to watch football. You know, and so you saw the Arsenal on TV and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I like the look of that. And it starts like that.
Marcus Hodges has an answer. He says, that's bullshit. You can swear in there, people. He says, Americans support any team from anywhere, just like in England.
I think they do as well. No, I think they do as well. You know, you get it. You know, why is Dallas called America's team? You know, people from all over the country support Dallas.
Still get people, even in this country, like, oh, you live in Plymouth. Why do you support Arsenal? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because I fucking grew up down the road from Arsenal. Maybe that just because you might be born somewhere and move somewhere else. Like, you know, I follow Lorient in France because I went to the village, absolutely loved the people, the village and the club. So I now follow that team. But I don't think you...
Top of the league, Chris.
Naturally. Thank you for that, Danny. But yeah, you don't need to be affiliated with a specific place or, you know, I think it's nice if you support your hometown club, but particularly somewhere like America, where it's such a massive place and, you know, so many teams and franchises and, you know, there's such a different type of sport in America. I don't know. I the one that always gets me is I wonder what makes someone in Europe or America fall in love with Arsenal over a team that's in their own backyard. You know what I mean? That's what always makes me smile a lot because I think it's awesome, but I never know why. But yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah, it's media. Yeah, it may be a family thing. You know, your granddad supports something. Yeah. You know, there's all sorts of things, but I don't think it's exclusive to any country or anything like that. I genuinely don't. You know, I mean, it's to say, you look to... I was listening to an NFL podcast a couple of years ago and they were talking about the Cowboys being on some series and they'll always go for the Cowboys because their ratings go through the roof. Absolutely through the roof because it's the Dallas Cowboys, America's team. Now, forgive me, you know, I'm not sure the demographics of Dallas, but I'm pretty sure... There's a lot more people from outside of Dallas that support Dallas than inside Dallas, if you know what I mean. You know, but, it is what it is, isn't it?
I've got a quick example for you. Sean's mum, George, her mum and dad, born and bred in North London, and they're Spurs, they're scum. Both of her sisters, Spurs and scum. George, when I first met her, she said, oh, I'm a Spurs fan. Said, you ever watch them? No, she wasn't interested. Within 6 months, she was coming to the Arsenal, wearing an Arsenal shirt, and she's a gooner. And my mum's a gooner, and Sean's a gooner. And another way, George's sister, Shelley, she's got two boys, Max and George. Well, they're about 13 and 7. The whole time I knew them growing up, they're always Arsenal fans. Oh, I support Arsenal because me and Sean and George did. Go and see them this summer. They're both wearing Man City tops. I went, hold on a sec. Well, the older one likes rugby. Don't trust that. Never trust a bloke who likes rugby. He's a lump, though. He's good at rugby. But they both wear Man City shirts. And I thought about this recently. With Arsenal's lack of quality football and all those other things that would naturally attract someone to being a football fan, we have lost out on best part. I mean, what's a generation? 25 years. I'd say half of a generation that we have lost in the local area because Arsenal were rubbish for so long. You look from 2007 to winning the FA Cup in 2000 and what was it, 12? 13? Yeah, that whole time, kids aren't going to go, well, I'm going to support Arsenal. What do they want? Nothing. Meanwhile, Chelsea, Man City and Man United are winning stuff. They're going to go and pick those teams.
But we live in a different era, though, don't we? In the era of social media. And it's not like my Jace, Dave, Danny, you know, our era. Yeah. It's not like those old days where just yesterday, I was saying to my missus, we went to a beach locally here and I was listening to the 3 o'clock kickoffs. On what we used to call the wireless. Danny, you'll know the wireless. I can see Dave, Mr. Hollick smiling from here. But it was so nice to go back to that day where you could go out and have your day, stick your earphones in and listen to 693-909-5 live and listen to. And I was genuinely surprised that that was still an option with the modern era, because where I was, you don't get internet signals. It's like, oh, going back to an analog little radio. And it was. And it brought back such nostalgia of standing in Dixon's watching teletext change over page 303 scores on a Saturday. It's not like that nowadays. Like in those days, you picked the team that was local to you because that's the only avenue you had. That was the only club you could go and see. And that was your upbringing. That was your club. And you had to really work hard to find TV coverage or coverage of a whole of your club. Nowadays,
that was it. That's all we got.
There you go. Whereas, you know, nowadays, if I said, you know what, fuck it, I'm done with Arsenal, I'm going to go and support Bogota, Alligator, swim-infested 11-6 from the deepest, darkest parts of Arizona, I probably could, you know, because nowadays...
Bogota in Colombia, but thanks for that.
I smile watching the Bournemouth game. There's Bournemouth TV now, you know, even clubs like Bournemouth, no disrespect, but, even clubs that size have got their own TV channel. I mean, it's a different
Arsenal
era.
We don't have it anymore, do they? We used to have Arsenal TV. On Sky?
It's Bournemouth. Yeah,
with the massive following that the Arsenal ladies have got, well done to the Arsenal ladies. Spanked Spurs 6-0 yesterday. Wonderful guy. Oh, he's fucking moving his car again. You two talk. Fucking nonsense.
You know, it's funny you mentioned them listening to the radio. My forever lasting memory of listening to football on the radio was listening to the Liverpool Forest semi-final at Hillsborough. When all that happened,
yes,
and you hear, you know, the radio coverage is so good. I was in tears. You kind of knew what was happening. You know, you knew it was a major disaster, and it was horrendous.
Painted a picture.
Yeah, it really did.
Well, they weren't back then. They weren't on the radio to try and tickle their own egos and be knobs like they are now. They were there to get across. They were there to be your eyes. If you couldn't be there, which they did superbly. Right, we've done nearly an hour. Got a good question here from Eric Newcomer. I think it wasn't Eric who stuffed some money down your dirty wife fronts at the last show, Jace.
Yeah,
good. It was dirty boy. He says, how do you feel about Nacho leaving, Chris?
I'm gutted. I'm really gutted. I mean, I get it. I do get it. To me, what it says is that they see Kolasinac as a more saleable asset. They see him as it makes business sense to have a 26-year-old stay at the club. Stay at the club and a 32-year-old leave the club. But much like, you know, I know people have their opinions, but much like the Koscielny situation in the summer, I know this is very different, but the two players that I just have always associated as ours, and Nacho's been... He's just been so consistent and so just such a consummate pro, and he's always been brilliant for us and has just always put in at least 7 or 8 out of 10 every single week, and he clearly loves the club. I felt he should have been captain a few years ago as well. So it's just a real shame. Maybe there's more to it than meets the eye, in that maybe he wants to go home. I think we've had a few of these before, and we were like Bill Bow, I think, came sniffing, and I think he sort of made light of the idea that he wouldn't mind going back to Spain at some point. So, you know, completely goes with our blessing if he does go. It does look like it's quite far down the line. The only thing I would say is if we let him go before the North London Derby, we are mental. I find that really bizarre that we would sanction that deal when the window's still open for a day after Sunday. Get it all done, get it all in place, let him go, you know, after Sunday, hopefully with a win, you know, make a big piece of it and wish him well. But the only thing I would also say is what that suggests to me, if we are letting him go, is that suggests to me that Tierney's not far off being fit. We've got an international break after this Sunday. Maybe he's ready. Or we're looking at the fixtures and thinking, well, Kolasinac can get us through for 2 games. But no, from a personal perspective, you know, Nacho's a he's a lovely bloke by all accounts from people that I know who've met him in person or, you know, have been at events he's been at, and indeed watched him in person live. So shame, real shame, I think, personally. What do you reckon, Jace?
I think this could be a bit of lunacy, to be honest there. I really do. I think, like, you know, I love Nacho. You know that. Okay,
he's, we all do.
He's been one of my favourite players down the line. His technical ability on the ball, his interplay has been a great attacking outlet. Yeah, there's been a couple of blunders over the years, but every player has that. But more often than not, his defending ability has been pretty good. He is getting to an age, so I understand why the club want to ship him on. But I look at the Tierney situation and I think, okay, it doesn't matter how far apart you are from fitness, you've got to play yourself into the game as well. And if that is more than 4 to 5 weeks and you're relying on Klaas, and that's what everybody seems to agree is not a great left back but a good wing back, then you could be in trouble. You know, you pick up one injury there, and if that starts to cost us points, you know, I didn't understand when people were talking about, oh, buy Tierney in January.
Yeah.
You know, what happens if you pick up injuries over the Christmas period? It doesn't work like that.
Let's not forget we're already playing a central midfielder at right back as it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just worry about this. I'm worried about the thought process behind it. Look, if we get through it with no scrapes and it doesn't affect us, great. But I think it's a gamble. I really do think it's a gamble. I think it's something that, you know, you look how, you know, we missed out on Champions League by 1 point last year. Okay. Now, you can pick out a whole host of incidents which contributed to us dropping that 1 point. You know, penalty misses, errors leading to penalties against us, etc. There's a whole host of them. But if you're letting a player go when you're unsure or you cannot be utterly certain of the cover coming back at a certain date, I think it's a bit reckless. I've got to be honest with you.
Yes, my view on that is in the summer, we let Cohen Bramall, who was only brought in a short-term cover for the under-23s, turned out to be a half-decent championship player, let him go. He's joined Colchester. Dominic Thompson, who was our really promising left-back, has gone to Brentford for $1 million with $2 million in possible add-ons. Monreal looks like he's going to be going. And Kolasinac has shown all last season. If you want, he can't defend. He is brilliant going forward. Some of the runs he makes and the crosses he puts are brilliant, but he is not a left back. And if Monreal goes, then you're going to have to play Kolasinac there. And that with Kolasinac on the left side and with Maitland-Niles on the right side, you've got two players out of those four at the back who aren't defenders, who aren't going
to
be.
You know, you've got four to four, though.
Cheeky, right? Yeah, lots of people are still up. There's helpful customer information there from Loki73. Yeah, people don't get those two things mixed up, especially if you're going into the Currys or Ann Summers. Don't go into either of those shops.
Can I answer Marquis Hodges' question just while I've noticed in the box? Yeah.
Where is it?
Any comments on the Mohamed Onana to Bordeaux rumours? I'm led to believe, and again, this is not me, this is who I've spoken to today. He was taking preliminary talks with Bordeaux today. So it sounds like that one will get done. So although there's been talk of it for a while, but yeah, his people have been actively speaking to Bordeaux as of today. So it sounds like that one's going to happen. And Mustafi to Monaco is still very much on the cards because Monaco at the moment are signing anyone with two legs. In any European league anywhere, basically.
In Monaco?
Yeah.
They have spent, Monaco have spent £250 million in this season and last season. They lost their first game 3-0, their second game 3-0, then drew 2-2. I should do my own podcast, shouldn't I, Chris? Have you got any ideas of a decent French podcast?
Yeah, but you ain't getting the gig, so fuck off. Yeah, they were 2-0 up at the weekend, threw away a 2-goal lead at home. All is not well in the Principality. But yeah, it looks like if we are going to offload those two players, both will go to France by the looks of it.
Any Loki, idea how much?
Excellent work, by the way. Loki's message there, that's excellently done.
I'm still halfway down. I'm still looking at McKeeb's one. So are we looking at about 10 to 15 million for Elneny and about 20 for Mustafi?
Elneny will be about 7 million. Mustafi will be about 10.
Ooh.
So financial losses there. But wages-wise, you
not
know.
Good.
Well, no, they're not financial losses. Those initial contracts have been amortised down throughout the years.
Isn't that where you're from, amortised down?
Hammondford.
Oh, sorry.
I thought it was a book about rabbits. I'm glad you got that. Thank God.
Loki 73 there. Elneny will be sold in a pyramid scheme.
That was good. That was good.
Right, quick one here before we move on to listeners' questions, because there's not many. We've got to get
this
done.
We're going to talk about the Northland Derby as well.
Yes, we will. Just a quick one. What as short answer as possible from our mate,
Akib.
Thank you. He says, my first footballing experience was Arsenal 3-3 with Leicester. What made that made or what made me fall in love with football and Arsenal? What was yours? My thing that really got me back into football, apart from my mum buying me a kit when I was 7, I didn't give a shit about football until I was about 12, Panini football sticker books. £1 John, who was on the Huntingdon market, was doing 2 sticker books, 100 packs of stickers for £1. I bought that in 1982. I've still got the book, 2 books. Actually, it was 2 books, yeah. And I've still got that, and I remember doing all that a lot. And I was this close to changing my team to fucking Norwich because they played in yellow, and I thought that's a cool-looking kit.
Cheering on Rule Fox.
A friend of mine was a Nottingham Forest supporter, and he changed it to Oxford. That went well for him. But no, I never really would have changed either. What was your first moment, Jace, that you went, oh, yeah?
I don't know. I've just always been into sport when I was growing up. There's always rugby and football. But I kind of, my dad played rugby for Armandford and then went on the committee and stuff. So I grew up in the rugby club. FA Cup final day is the one that made me fall in love with Arsenal.
Every year.
You know, you'd have the build up to it. I'd sit there my breakfast, starting to watch a build up. And it was Liverpool, Arsenal Ipswich, it was. And, you know, before the game, you pick your team. And I picked the guys in red and white arms. And then there was no team in red and white arms. What the hell has gone on here? I've been cheated. Of course, we're playing in yellow. And we lost that day. But it just kind of stuck with me. So, you know, I don't know. I just think, you know, look, sport is brilliant. You know, however you get into it, it's just fantastic, you know. It's just... there's just so many great things about it. Brings you together with people. You make friends. You get confidence through it. You know, you get to take a piss out of Chris. How are Activate, Chris?
Good, thanks, Jace. Yeah.
Excellent. Team of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Team of you. Ellis asked me to ask about that. Fuck
Ellis. Good, yeah. Fuck Ellis, yeah. Fuck Ellis twice with a big cucumber.
No, the comments are saying fuck Carl. That's fuck Carl is the new fuck Ellis. You're in. No, you're in.
I don't know if I want to get on Carl's bad side.
I'm not being funny, Daddy. When you're sitting down in that chair, okay, and you meet Carl, you're not going to get up to his thigh.
No,
Carl's a big boy.
I know he's going to tickle me when he sees me.
He's also a lovely fella.
He is. Chris, what was the moment that you went, oh, football? Yes. When I was little, I only ever played, I think I played 2 games of football for the B team when I was in St John's. I remember just standing there by the goalpost the whole time thinking, this is shit.
Yeah. Well, I was not dissimilar. It won't surprise many of our regular listeners to know that as a child I was a bit of a fairy, a bit of a Nancy boy.
As a child, Chris, you were Chris Tiger Carpenter, weren't you? So we've heard.
I was what?
Tiger Woods Carpenter.
Oh, well, yeah, that's probably a story for a rainy day. But, yeah, technically, I suppose I was more of a teen, not a child, but, yeah.
As a child.
Yeah, I wasn't a child. From 13 to 15, it's hardly child.
I've shared a room with you, okay? And when you walk into a hotel room...
Did he do his hair, Jace?
Oh, no, wait for this. Me, Dom and Chris walk into this hotel room, okay? And Chris said, oh, I hope they got hair straighteners. I think I've left mine at home.
No, I said hair dryer. There's a difference.
Oh, yeah, sorry. You had your hair straighteners with you, didn't you?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I was after a hair dryer.
I have got images of Chris lying back doing his hair. My face must have been a picture. You'll have to ask Dom because I just...
And when he says images, he literally means photographs.
I do, yeah.
There on our photographs. Anyway, going back to the question, I much like you, Danny, I didn't really like football for a long time. I supported Arsenal from a very young age because, like we said earlier on, it was in the family. It was handed down. Like my granddad was big into football. He was actually a Southampton fan, but from a family of Arsenal fans, and obviously the area I grew up was very close to Highbury, so that was where the link came from in terms of picking my team. But I would be a complete liar if I said I was addicted to Arsenal from that age. I just kind of followed them, supported them, but I wanted to go against the grain. I didn't really like football, and then weirdly.
Who'd have thought?
But weirdly, what got me into football in a big way was World Cup USA 94. And I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, Italia 90, Gazza's tears. No, for me, it was the World Cup England weren't at. Weirdly, just because I remember being at that age where I had a TV in my bedroom and I found it like really fun to be watching football at like midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning on a portable 14-inch colour TV where my mum didn't realise. And I still remember that Maradona celebration where he was coked off his tits against, was it Nigeria? When he scored.
Ran up to the camera in the dark blue kit.
And it's like, and you know, you can just imagine the drugs people thinking, who can we test now? Ah, him. Let's test him. You know, I still remember that. And Daniel Amakachi's celebration for Nigeria when he did the pissing dog, when he crouched into the goal and crouched his leg. But that was what made me fall in love with football, really. And my granddad bought me... My first Arsenal kit I owned was the 94-95, the Nike Lightning Bolt, the candy cane socks. That was the first kit I had bought. But my first actual football kit was a plain out of a box sports shop down the road, like Jace, you'll know this, like in the village type of shops, the only sports shop in the village kind of thing. And it's just a plain, and it was like a plain blue football shirt, like shiny material, shiny like tracing paper shorts that were really short. And it wasn't a team, and I drew the Italia Calcio badge on it, and I put our Baggio 10 on the back, and I fell in love with Italy during that. Italy and Sweden were the teams I fell in love with during that World Cup. That was it.
Do you remember the game USA Brazil, Leonardo?
Yes, Leonardo, And that American kit with the stars and stripes all over it.
He broke his leg, didn't he?
And that was the World Cup where Carlos Valderrama was assassinated. Not Carlos Valderrama. What's his bloody name? That's going to bug me. I'm going to have to look that up. Yeah, the Colombian Escobar.
Pablo.
Assassinated, in that World Cup as well. People forget that. And as somebody's put in the chat there, formerly Noza, that penalty by Diana Ross, do you remember? She miskicked it and they still brought the goal in half. Oh my God, that was hilarious. But yeah, that was a long answer, I'm sorry. But that World Cup was what got me back into football. And then we went into the next summer and Arsenal signed Dennis Bergkamp and the rest is history. So that was when my proper love affair really sort of reignited, if you will, with Arsenal. So, yeah, good times.
Before we mention Eric's kind donation, a quick thing that Loki has mentioned here that I can go to both of them. 100 years in the top division. We have although Everton have been in the top division longer than Arsenal, it isn't continuous. So we've had 100 continuous seasons after we finished about 45th in Division 2. Spurs finished third and we went up for the restructuring of the first division. That was some world-class shithousery. Many palms were greased that night.
Georgie Graham wasn't the first Arsenal man to take a ban.
No, he wasn't.
And Mike has corrected us, by the way. Yeah, the Escobar assassination was actually technically after the World Cup, wasn't it?
Eric has wrote the show. He's been kind enough to give us $1.99 of his American cents. He says, "What's your North London derby starting 11?" So this will bring us nicely on to a quick chat for, we've got 17 minutes to go before same old Arsenal start because we've stolen their nights. That's why we started early and we're not going to clash with them. And so I think we can all agree that it's going to be Leno in goal. It's going to be Maitland-Niles at right back. It's going to be Monreal. Is it going to be Monreal at left back?
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably say it's more likely to be Kolasinac. I have a feeling they're going to let Monreal go before, but I hope it's Monreal. But yeah,
I'm just checking the latest Arsenal news now, and there is nothing here about Monreal leaving as yet, and this is up to 7:34, so that's an hour ago. But yeah, so
I think you've got to go Socrates and Luis, okay, at centre back. So you've got to go Monreal at left back, because Socrates, as much as I'm not his biggest fan, he was magnificent against Harry Kane last year.
You've never made that clear, Jason. You should make these things more clear.
I know.
Right, so up front, are we going three up front? And we can work back from there.
You've got to go three up front at home.
It's going to be Aubameyang left, Lacazette centre, Pepe right. So that means we've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we've got three in midfield. Is it going to be Torreira and Xhaka?
I would.
And then who are you going to play ahead of them? Are you going to go Ceballos or are you going to go Willock?
I'd go Ceballos. To hold on to the ball.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'd go Ceballos, but I would have Guendouzi and Torreira as well. So
I'm the black sheep. People, if in case you're wondering why we're talking over each other, this is still the beta of this software. And occasionally, like, Chris is a little bit behind his audio and his video, and it happens. I think it happened to Jace last week. So that's why we're not being rude. We've got this down to a fine art. I liked Guendouzi because the best description of him is like a wasp in a jam jar. Very, very flicky around and quick. You don't know what it's going to do. There you go. That's it. Right. I think we've had another donation, didn't we?
I put it in our chart.
I'm going to go and find it. Oh, it's from
Jim Housen.
Yes. So you read that out, Jason, because my twat neighbour's moving his noisy car again.
Okay. So the magnificent Jim Housen piles in the donation and he says, "My first show since Steve. RIP, big man, love you all." And Jim is referring to the Lord Hillwood, who sadly passed away on August the 4th, who will always be missed by us. Will always be missed by us.
I don't know what the fuck he's doing with that car. He's just parked in the middle of the car park.
Okay, so do we move on to some questions then?
Yes. Right. Oh, there's lots. Oh, Kelly's there. She says hello. And Chris says, Kelly, could someone put in there? Hiya. Say hello to them. What are you up to?
You leave my Kelly alone. Love it a bit.
We're a cat collective. So, it's the free version of StreamYard. Someone was asking. Right, so quickly, we have got some questions to go through. We've covered the North London Derby. Is there anything else anybody wants to say about that before we move on to questions, Chase? Chris?
What do you think? I think we've got to go for them. You know, I think I don't think we have to be silly in going for it. You know, but you have to build through the phases and really have a crack at these guys.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Go at them. If we play anything like we did last year against them, we'll beat them. They haven't impressed me. They're leaving out their best players because Pochettino's a fucking fraud and his ego is bigger than his ability. Fact. And he's cunt. And so are all Spurs. And also, I don't know if anybody else noticed this. I know one person noticed this and I nodded along, and that was Clive from the... Clive _ AFC, I believe, who's from the Arsenal America podcast. Very good follow, by the way. Harry Kane's ankle don't look right to me. I don't think he's anywhere near fit. You watch that penalty that wasn't a penalty against Newcastle. You watch his left foot when he plants it. He's very gingerly planting that when he's in full sprint. I don't think he's anywhere near fit. So you're expecting like a really clever... tactical analysis. No, if I'm Socrates, I'm going to stand on that cunt's ankles within 30 seconds and put him out to Christmas.
Actually, do you know what's called for? If his ankle is that bad, I thought he made a move to fall over themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he did.
But to be honest, if he has got a gammy ankle, do you know what you want? You actually want a... who's the French lad you liked?
Coquelin.
Yes, a Coquelin challenge.
Coquelin.
Into the area, bang. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah, that's what you want to do.
And I would.
See.
Jim and that other fucking cheating little cunt up front, smash him in half within 5 minutes. But yeah, I agree with Jace. Go at him 100%. Because I think I speak for everyone here. I do not want an international break with them lording it up over us. I mean, I don't want them lording it up over us full stop. And I'm going on holiday in 12 years. In 12 years? 12 days. Hopefully, not 12 years. I'm going on holiday in 12 days. I want to go on holiday with a smile on my face. So, Arsenal, I'm fucking looking at you, boys. All right?
Actually, Thunder Road puts in here as well. Spurs have right-back issues as well. Aurier being held out in case of sale. Walker's Peter subbed in the second half due to hamstring. You know, with the pace we have with Aubameyang and Pepe, you want to be going down those channels.
Dave's up for it. Look at that.
Yeah, but, you know, but then you've got to get Ceballos. If he's tip of a three or whatever, he's got to get up and support Lacazette. You've got to have runners coming off Lacazette.
Right, one quick thing. It's Arsenal Vision that Clive is on with Elliot Absolutely. Yankee Gunner.
Yeah,
so our friends over there. Very good podcast. Go give it a listen. Right, now then, I'm going to try something new. These are tweets that people have sent us. This is our very first question. And I've got the fucking thing moved already. There you go. Right, question from Peter Kennedy. Another season, another slow start. When will there be change? And he means, it says in brackets, Birmingham Pirates, not Arsenal.
Well, Dan, I can safely say I've been campaigning for change at this club for a few years now, okay? And unfortunately, the board and the owner don't seem to ever listen. I think, you know, I mean, when you lose a derby to Tamar Vigh in the way they did, was it 7-1?
First team, we're seconds are in our league, so, you know.
We're not
focused on the cups. Cups mean nothing. We're not focused
I'm not
on
having
the
that at all. I'm not having that at all, Mr. Chairman, okay? You're out of order, okay? Silent Chris, you know, ye care, do ye, okay? You know what I mean? Come on, get with it.
We're building. We've got another tough game this Sunday. Might touch on the Pirates before we finish later on with, because I think our campaign's coming to a close soon, isn't it, Danny? So I might touch on that in a bit. But yes. we've been doing all right. Yeah, thank you, Carl. Doing one. We started the season very, very well with a 2-1 win. We were quality. We did have a bit of a blemish, certainly in the cup game against Tamar Vigh. I admit we weren't good without three of our first choice back four. And then Sunday, we lost to a team who are our second favourites of the league. So, you know, is what it is. But we'll keep plodding along. We've got nice kits and our manager is a sexy beast. So what more do you want?
I'm not sure for the second part of that, but your kits are banging, to be fair.
I hope you dear listeners, you dear viewers, not listeners, are not going to expect this kind of interaction and production when these button monkeys are banging away. Be miracle can get their camera facing the right way. Right, another question from Kurt Ice. This will go to you, Jace, first. Which of our defensive problems is worse, letting opponents attack straight through the middle or allowing too many crosses in our box?
That's all part of the same thing, isn't it? You know, ultimately, we need to find a balance. On Saturday, it was a different kettle of fish. That was a tactical decision from Unai, and he allowed them all the space down out wide. You know, you need to get that set up right. If you're playing a holding midfielder, you know he needs to actually cover these areas, whether it be centrally or out wide. You know, you can't commit too many forward. If you are committing men forward, you have to keep players back where, okay, they know their jobs. You know, against Tottenham, if they're going to play Moura, you're going to get a bit of pace down out wide. If Son's there, they're going to be very dangerous down the middle. You've just got to keep an eye on it. But, you know, the lack of pace with Socrates, the lack of actually attacking space and attacking the ball when we're playing zone or in open play is a bit of an issue. I think it's you know, it's all part of the same problem. I don't think you can prioritise one or the other. You have to actually get your defensive rhythms sorted. Do you know what I mean?
And defensive everybody... rhythms, that sounds sexy.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? You know, you have certain practices in attack. You know, players know where they're going to come into space and what have you. You know, when you just have to make sure that, so for argument's sake, at a corner, we used to just have Hector on the halfway line. You know, he's the only one covering back. You can't afford to do that with the pace in the Premier League. You have to have set agendas for any given situation.
Okay, Chris, I'm going to – the last question is – we have some other questions, but they cover Liverpool and we're in a bit of a hurry. This is a question for – that I'm going to answer this one. Where's it gone? There it is. Fraz says, what's your all-time top Premier League 11 that have never won the Premier League? I'm answering this easy, Spurs. You've got so many to pick from any season, doesn't matter. You've got 26 seasons. Any of them will do. It's, that makes me very happy.
What teams? Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, Karen. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we have. Oh dear, Thunder's been a bit cheeky. Right. We are going to wrap this up. So if we do a little bit about the Pirates, Chris, tell people about the draw thing and when it ends. It ends on the 31st.
Yeah. Thanks, Danny. Yeah. Just a quickie. I don't want to grovel and beg too much. But yeah. Some of you, most of you, if you listen to this, will be aware by now that Danny and I did a podcast about the Pirates. You know the drill. ABW has been good to me, as have all of the gents who we pod with. Been really kind. I enjoy the banter and everything else. It's all good fun. But yeah, I do put in a lot of time, effort, and energy to keep my dear old Sunday League team alive. And any donations that have come from the podcast in the past have massively helped us out. This year being no different. So we have put together a raffle, which is £5 an entry. Minimum £5. You can do more if you wish, but we're not money hungry. £5 if you can afford it, and that gets you an entry into a draw, which we're doing, as Danny says, on the 31st of August, which is in 4 days, 5 days, 5 days, 4 days, 4 days, Saturday. Oh, Christ.
We might do it on Sunday the 1st, actually, because Sundays are better for us, aren't they?
You've got until this Saturday, basically, until Saturday midnight. You've got until
that's when it ends. Then we pick a draw date later because I think we might be playing on the 1st.
Yes, there you go. Yes, so,
sorry, Jason.
So we'll be doing the draw. Danny and I will probably work out a way of getting on this and doing it live. But first prize is the watch. It's Gav at She Wore. You all know Gav by now. God bless him.
Worth £100. That's how much he used to sell them for, but he's not making any more.
No, it's an awesome present, a gift that he's given to us. So it's a clock end watch. That's clock end watch. Second prize is the clock end clock,
60 quid.
Danny has one of, and third prize, by no means a less prize, is a Pirate shirt of your choice, either a home or away shirt, or if you're a classic vintage collector, you can have one of our previous season shirts. I've got a few still here, that'll all be printed up and done to your specifications. But basically, yeah, just thank you massively to those who've entered. I think we're over £100, not far off £200 now. So thank you.
We're over 200.
Oh, we are.
If I win anything, I'm not putting it back in. I'm having it.
Well, if I win the clock, I don't want it. It'll redone. Fife doesn't want anything. The rest of it, it's up for grabs. Right, you two, what are you thinking about?
There's one last question here.
Okay. We've got 3 minutes.
It's from Carl. Question for Jason. How much of a twat is Ellis? Right. He's a massive twat. That's all I'm going to say. Fuck Ellis. He missed the first goal. When he's doing the radio show on Saturday, he missed the first goal because he had to have a poo. It was only 5 minutes in half time. The boy has no commitment. No commitment. You compare that to Carl's commitment to screwing up London Underground on a daily basis.
Like clockwork.
Can't compare. Can't compare. No.
Okay. Anyway, right, so you two have a think about who your gentleman's not to go into while I say thank you for the people who donated during the live show. J-Rob, Daryl Kane, Dean Robinson, Eric Newcomer, Jove82, and then doing tonight's show, Ed Loud and his granddad, Eric Newcomer and Jim Housen. So thank you very much to all you beautiful bastards who stuffed £5 notes down Jason's wife runs. If you ever want them back, there is a cleaning fee. Right, so Chris, who would you like to say hello to?
Reverend Raj Patel at Raj Patel 1809. What a man! What a man! He was driven to tears by Ben Stokes. Yeah. I'm not a huge cricket fan. Even I found that incredible.
I watched it too.
Sporting day. That was absolutely incredible. And I pinged the Reverend straight away. I said, my God, that was some finish. He also sent me a brilliant video on Facebook the other day where he was announced as one of the umpires for, I think it was a charity match at Lords.
It was a touring match from Melbourne.
Touring match.
Yeah. Brilliant. And it was like, and the umpires for today's game, Raj Patel. And he came walking out, giving it all that. Fantastic. No, we love Raj to bits. Very much missed. And yeah, hope all is well, my good man. Yeah, give him a little follow. But that was a wonderful day for English cricket and for Raj as a massive cricket fan. So good times. Give him a follow. Wonderful man.
Jace, if you can get your signing under an hour, that'd be brilliant.
To a guy who's asked three questions, and I don't think we've asked any of them. So our apologies, Siddhartha. Okay, it's Siddhartha Sidhu. That's at Siddhartha, SIDDARTHA 27. You're a top man. You always support this podcast. Thank you very much, mate. Sorry, Danny's a bit of a git and changed the night of the podcast to a Monday, annoying us all.
I have them here from Siddharth. He says, why do we play like Burnley with the attacking players we have in our team? I'm not asking this question because we played the way against Liverpool, but we do this even against lower and mid-table sides. I still don't understand how Emery wants us to play, which we kind of covered when we were talking about the game. We didn't want to go over it twice. He's moving his fucking car against someone talk.
Okay, so that's it for this evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you ever so much for your support. There will be a live show after the Scum game on Sunday where myself, John Welsh, and Josh Dore will be plugging away in it.
If the sun's not out, because we all know Josh can't come out in the sun.
Can you imagine?
Vampire Dore. Can we really quickly just slide this in? Best of luck to Bolton Wanderers Football Club and to Bury, because without teams like that, we could all be in this situation again. Fucking sucks what happens to massive football clubs. I know they were cunts in the past, but the past is the past. I really hope they find a new buyer because that's fucking horrendous. So, yeah, best of luck.
I remember the Swans, okay? You know, even I gave a few quid to the Swans when they were... yeah, no, I'm tight. You know that, okay?
I could have gone on Kit Kats.
Well, you know, beer at least, you know. But I mean, for the Swans to get up the Premier League after that, there is hope in these situations. But yeah, as you said, good luck to them. Dan,
bloody good on Sunday as well, the Swans.
I was messaging my mate Mick Dagger, who's a postman in Bolton, season ticket holder, and I was talking to him a day about it. He says, not looking good at the moment. They can't even pay the cleaners. I'm sure someone will buy us, just dragging their feet at the moment. Yeah, so best wishes to Bolton. And I was explaining to someone what a great side they used to be. They gave us a hell of a run for our money a couple of times. I actually went to their old ground. Shithole, but... yeah, I like Bolton. Anyway, people, if you can now go to YouTube, go and find Same Old Arsenal podcast. You've got Craig, you've got Lee, and you've got Kevin Campbell. And I think Dan's on there as well. And then those scumbags in America from the Gooners podcast, they are doing a show, I think, at 10 p.m. That'll be Mike and Andy just talking about their fantasies of bathing with each other and where they'd hide the rubber duckies. So that is the end of the show. Unlike Jason, I'm going to press end show now, and then I'm going to put end broadcast so it ends on time.
Danny. Yes. Dan, switch your shit off.
As soon as I scored that goal, I was fucking livid. Splendid business.